you so much for hanging out with us. It is a beautiful sunny day in Chicago. We are looking out the Allstate Showcase windows on Michigan Avenue. And if you're wondering, wait a minute, that's not King John. That's not John Williams. It's not Pete McMurray either, who was in for John all last week. I'm Patty Vasquez, and we're so excited that you're here. We have a lot coming up on the show. I'm so excited to share my guests with you and the topics. We're going to talk about things locally, nationally, and personally. And if that sounds weird, on the personal level, we're going to talk about setting goals for yourself. We do these New Year's resolutions. We commit to making ourselves, you know, healthier or, you know, more informed. And then, you know, it gets to be a few months later, and you're like, hey, yeah, I didn't do that. Maybe next year. Well, we'll have positivity expert Dr. Daphne Scott on after the 2:30 news to talk about how to recommit to yourself. So that's going to be after 2:30. We also have, we are going to talk just a little bit about the Correspondents' Dinner, but from a different take. We're going to talk to journalist Clarence Page just after 2 o'clock, and then comedian Lewis Black, who has hosted the Correspondents' Dinner. So I want to get his take on just the event and what it means for comedy, talking about politics and journalism and where we are right now. So we'll talk about that in just a little bit. We'll also talk to Representatives Stephanie Kifowit and Steve Anderson about some local politics. They are reps at the state level, and we've gotten to know them in Springfield. But to kick things off, I have to get to our first guest. Mostly, I mean, Senator Katowski is in studio. He's now the president and CEO of ChildServe, helping kids reach happier and healthier lives.
Yes, thank you.
And I have to get to both of you. You both get up early. Anna Bellaval joins us on the line. Anna, who, of course, is the extraordinary Around the Town host on WGN-TV Morning News. Hi, Anna Bellaval.
Hi. Extraordinary is a wonderful word because I'm anything but ordinary.
Well, that's how we should all strive for that, don't you think?
I know. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I'm not ordinary, and that's pretty cool.
Well, and the thing is, it doesn't mean that you're overly extraordinary. It just means extraordinary. It's more than ordinary, but not. I don't have a baseline for what extraordinary is, but
no, I know.
You're magnificent. Does that help?
No, I like extraordinary. I get called cute a lot too, and at 43, cute is awesome.
Yeah, take that to the bank and enjoy that. What was your Around the Town this morning? I didn't get a chance to catch you.
It was the America's Beauty Show, which is the largest beauty show, and why I like to cover it is because no one else can get in unless they work in the industry. So it's kind of the show where you get to see what's new and what may be at your hairdressers or at, Ulta or Sephora in a year or two. You get to see it firsthand, and it's kind of cool. I wore a pink wig, and it was fun. And then tomorrow, cider is kind of like the new beer. You know how we had all these artisanal beers? Well, I'm going to go to a place where they make cider.
You're going to be getting your day drinking on?
I'm telling you, this is the best gig in town. Every day something different and extraordinary. And, you know, I get to learn all the time, and I love it. And I get to also do some stand-up for great causes, like the ones we're talking about today.
Well, look at you. She knows how to pivot way better than I do. Like, I would have gone on and asked her more about Around the Town. She's like, let's get back to work here.
What a great transition.
It was a great transition.
That was extraordinary.
I'm sorry not to be there.
I know. I like hugging you. But
I know. I'm so sorry. But, you know, my second job and the most important is being a mom. So I have to stay close to home so I can pick up and do all that.
And by the way, I know that you just posted a photo of your niece yesterday outside bundled up in a hoodie trying to enjoy the Chicago weather. Your niece is here from Puerto Rico because so she could go to school while everything is still in turmoil there, right?
Right. So she came in October when her parents had no power and her school had no power. And so she is going to a local high school, and then she went home in December but really liked it here. There was power back at home and at school, but she decided to finish her sophomore year here, and I have a really understanding husband who said, sure, the 16-year-old can stay. So we're in a 3-bedroom apartment with a teenager and 2 little kids.
Anna gets to practice. She gets to practice for when the kids are in high school.
Right, and I have to say that when you live this far away and something like this happens in your hometown, this is the only way we felt like we could help. Besides donating and going to cover it with WGN, the aftermath of Hurricane Maria is still very present in Puerto Rico, and hurricane season starts again. And I live thousands of miles away. I've been living away from home for 22 years, and this is the only way I felt, and we felt, that we could make a difference in our family situation. So it's been an honor.
Well, and that's, again, why I wanted to bring you on with Senator Katowski. I know you guys haven't had the chance to meet, but we're going to have a great comedy night coming up. And I think that people often do feel like they want to help. Mm-hmm. They want to donate. But here's a great opportunity for us. And the way Senator Katowski and I met was at an Epilepsy Foundation evening
right.
of comedy. Anna and I do a lot of these events, and it's always just so it's just so heartwarming when you hear personal stories, when you know you're at least making some difference, and people are in the room together knowing they want to make the world a better place. Now, Anna, I don't know if you've had a chance to watch very many of Senator Katowski's run at jokes. He wants to do some stand-up for our event, Stand Up for Kids, coming up on May 24th at Stage 773. But, Anna, I hear he wants to try out a joke on us, and he wants okay. to run it past the entire audience. 312-981-7200. I will put it up to the audience. They can call or text us if they feel that. And it's okay, Senator. There's no pressure.
Not feeling a lot.
All right, go ahead.
Just a few million people listening.
Something like that.
All across the country and the world. But I just want to say Anna's video was outstanding that she did, just telling me to leave it to the professionals. Mm-hmm. I'm trying, but
we're not trying to put you down. We just want you to relax.
Right. And you're just trying to relax and do what I'm good at, which is
stay in your lane.
With kids, stay in my lane. But here's what I'm thinking. I have another joke.
Okay.
Right, another quality joke. And say, what did the horse say when it tripped?
What did the horse say?
Help, I've fallen, and I can't giddy up. I can't giddy up.
Is he Googling these? I feel like he's Googling these, Daddy.
No, these just come to me. These just come to me in the middle of the night. I have a notepad, and I write them out. I mean, Google, is that a search? Is that like a search engine or something?
Yes, it's a search engine in the interweb.
The interweb.
Like my father calls it. Okay, Patty.
Yeah, I think that Senator, we just want you to have as much fun as possible. And don't take on extra stress. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Everyone can either vote on that joke as to whether or not Senator Katowski should make an appearance at our Stand Up for Kids event coming up on May 24th. You can also check out the other jokes that he has on their Instagram account for Child Surf.
And Facebook, too.
And
the Facebook as well, yes.
Where you will also find reactions from Annabella Ball and me.
You guys I've caught your act, and you guys are really genuinely funny.
We just love what we do.
Thank you.
And here's the thing, though. I would say this. What you've really communicated to me, Patty, in not so subtle terms, you said if you can't be a stand-up comedian, at least you can stand up for kids. And that's the message of that night, of the comedy night. We're so grateful to have Anna there and Patty and Ralphie Roberts. And it's going to be a great night for Child Serve. I'm really excited. And everyone in that room, they're there. And I think we have a lot of people who would love to be comedians like you and be professionals and make people laugh. And they just can't, right? And they don't have that kind of talent and that skill set, but they can't stand up for kids.
There you go.
And that's the whole idea.
There you go. I feel better, Anna. I think that we have encouraged Senator Katowski to help stay in his lane.
Oh, no.
We're letting him vent. I mean, he has plenty of platforms that he can get this out of his system before our event.
Yes, I agree. And here's the thing, too. I don't know how people are feeling about stand-up comedy today. I feel like maybe people are a little apprehensive about what comics do. Anna and I tend to do autobiographical material, a little bit observational. We tell stories about our lives. We're monologists. I don't make fun of anybody. Anna never does.
I can't, because then I'll have to interview them at some point.
That's good. Yeah.
I really can't do material. People are like, you should talk about your experiences on TV. I said, I really can't. It would be dangerous, because I don't know when I'm going to see those people again.
Have you ever been asked to roast somebody? Because I've been asked many times. I did it once in 2001, and it went fine, but there was a lot of fighting amongst the people in the audience, because they had given me material they wanted me to do, and it was very specific, and I didn't like the feeling. I didn't like the kind of chaos that it caused, but it also isn't my nature to kind of go after people.
I don't like confrontation either.
I'm going to tell you this, though. Patty and I, when we met, your comedy was a way to build a bridge and to help, I think, people in my position and representatives like Representative Kifowit and Anderson understand better about the challenges facing families who have children who are going through difficulties and what families are facing. And it was a bridge to talk about that and also to advocate better. And our relationship came about as a result of that. And you did such wonderful work to do stand up. It was Stand Up for Epilepsy.
Right.
And you did so much work to help people who have epilepsy, not just, to get through the day, but also to help get the support they needed
right.
to have a quality of life. And that's a gift. And I that's one of the things I think that's so wonderful about comedy, is you can kind of look at a situation and be a little bit lighter about it, but also at the same time give you the kind of insight that you need so you can be more informed if you're really good at it, like you and Anna are. You're really...
Anna Beva.
Yeah, yes.
You have to say the way Bill
says it. So I'm trying to do this so she doesn't heckle me anymore for video. So just so you know, Anna's this like, isn't totally self
Patty made me. Patty made me.
Anna, I have to say, it has been so much fun doing comedy shows with you. I do want comedy to be in a little bit of a brighter light today, because people are really going after sort of the idea of mean comedy. But what we do is have fun, don't you think, Anna?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't know. I think that we, because we're self-deprecating many times and we talk about our experiences, it's just... The way that we do comedy is just pointing the obvious. And I think I have a comedian friend, and he says this to us all the time, right, Patty? We don't apologize because we're comedians. We don't apologize for jokes. I don't take it that far. But I don't know. If you're going to have a comedian in an event like the White House Correspondents' Dinner, I mean, you invited her.
Yeah, that was some...
You know her comedy. We're all vetted. You know,
yeah.
We send videos. People call producers and say, I want a clean act. I want a political act. I mean, you all vet her. So that's what... You know, maybe you didn't like her style, but this happens, I feel, every year. I feel like...
Every few years, yep. It does.
Every year they have somebody. Didn't that guy lose like a Comedy Central show because of it?
There was. Yeah, there was somebody. I can't remember who it was, but you're absolutely right. It comes up again. But that's why you and I are doing a night of positive energy.
Uh-huh.
It's all for a good time and for a good cause. Ralphie Roberts, Annabella Val, and I will all be at Stage 773, Stand Up for Kids, for Child Serve. Where can people go to get ticket information?
Oh, they can go to the Stage 773 website. I think it's www.stage73.com, and I get the tickets directly through there. It's $50 a ticket,
mm-hmm.
reasonably priced ticket. And for young professionals like Patty and Anna and Stephanie, sorry, Representative Anderson, you can for
wow.
$40. That's not right. We're going after him because,
yeah.
You know what I mean? That's not
because
right.
He's across the aisle. Why
exactly.
Why you got to be like that?
Yeah, why you got to be like that? It's not right. So, anyways, the tickets are very reasonable, and it's going to be a great night. We're really excited about it. And Stage 773, the venue of 150 seats there, and I'm really looking forward to the night. And all I really have to do is like introduce the really funny people. And
I'm looking forward to the dad jokes. I'm looking forward to the dad jokes.
I have to find a good joke by the time the night, right? Just at least say something to get like a couple guffaws.
I mean, if you're really writing these, it's commendable.
But if
I think I would have said I Googled them.
Yeah.
But I think you're putting time into it, and we can admire that. I wasn't a stand-up comedian. I started about
10 nice.
Years ago with help from other people. So listen, baby steps.
What's so awesome.
Baby steps.
Yeah.
Well, what's Google? I don't know. What is that?
Don't forget to catch Anna tomorrow. She'll be which do oh, you're not going to tell us which one, but you're going to check out one of the brand new cider distilleries.
They produce cider, and it's in Naperville.
Okay, excellent. Well, have fun day drinking. I'm jealous
it's
of your job.
Because I don't like cider, so I may have to...
Save me a bottle.
Okay, so that's what I'll say.
Okay, there you go. It's delicious. That's Annabella Val. Follow her on Twitter at Annabella Val, right? At Annabella Val?
Yes.
Annabella Val.
I just love it. Honestly, I just love that all of you say the full name. Thank God I took off the Maria, because could you imagine that mouthful? Ana Maria Belaval.
Ana Maria.
Ooh, I like
Belaval.
That, though.
Follow
me.
I love you, Anna. Have a great rest
love
of your afternoon.
You too. Guys, thank you so much, and I'm so looking forward to the event in 2 weeks.
It'll
thank
be a
you.
Blast. Thank you, Anna. We'll talk more bye. About Child Serve when we come back in just a moment on 720 WGN. Okay. Senator Gutowski is the president and CEO of Child Serve. Tell us a little bit about this organization and how it got started.
Well, thanks for letting me
on the show. I'll let you talk interrupted.
Really?
when you stop trying to do stand-up, we can have a conversation.
I know. It's almost freeing, though, to fail miserably in front of millions of people. I love it.
Yeah.
It's invigorating. Yeah. That's what I'm telling you.
Takes myself. More than once.
Anyway, Child Serve is an organization that we are dedicated to building better lives for children and families so they can reach their potential. And what we do is we protect, heal, and educate kids who are at risk, who've suffered from abuse and neglect and trauma, so they can have the best life possible. We do that through early childhood education for kids ages 0 to 5. We help them get ready for kindergarten, make sure they reach developmental milestones. These are kids living in poverty. And then we help children who've suffered from abuse and trauma to find a permanent loving home. 40 kids in our program last year were adopted. And then we work with kids who are homeless young adults and teenagers, make sure they have a place to live, make sure they get support they need, make sure they graduate from high school, and for the older kids, that they're going to college or they have a job. And we serve 2,468 children and families every year. It's a wonderful place to work. It's a great opportunity to make sure that, you know, kids who are struggling just have the opportunity that a lot of people, I think, sometimes take for granted. And these are kids who work really, really hard. They're devoted, they're dedicated, they're committed, and they're loving kids, and they're just looking for someone to believe in them and give them an opportunity. So what you've been a part of helping us, which has been great. You were the—
It's been my honor.
Yeah.
And I and when you say things that we take for granted, I mean, it's anything from backpacks with school supplies. And I went shopping recently to Mattress Firm because they have helped you supply kids with a bed. There's nothing more personal than having your own bed to sleep in. Some of these kids, whether they were having to share beds, some of them sleeping on the floor, in whatever situation they were in, it means a lot in their lives.
Mattress Firm donated 17 mattresses for our kids in our group homes. There's teenagers ages 12 to 17. And it's a real big deal for a child to be able to sleep in a bed that's firm, that's clean, that's new, that's comfortable. And Mattress Firm was there when we needed all these new beds. There's been so many organizations that have stepped up, like HBK Engineering has been outstanding, Sasser Family Holdings. But what they do is, and so many churches in the Methodist community and otherwise, but last year we had 1,100 gifts donated at Christmas time for our kids. It was close to $60,000 worth of gifts. And these are kids who've faced a lot of instability around the holiday, a lot of struggles. They don't get to see their families as much as they would like. And we make sure they have the best holiday, best Christmas possible. And then around the beginning of the school year, we have literally thousands of backpacks that are donated with school supplies and notebooks and books and paper and pencils and everything. So there's so many ways to get involved and make a difference in the life of a child. You can be a foster parent. You can be a mentor. Like you had said, the clear difference that I often see and when you meet the kids that we have in our care is that it's not that they can't make it. It's not that they don't have the intelligence. They do. They're just as smart as every other kid. They are just as resilient and dedicated, devoted. They just need an opportunity.
Yeah.
And they need an opportunity to be able to have somebody understand and believe in them and make sure that they have the support that's necessary to be successful.
And how do people find out more where they can donate, where they can volunteer, and if they're interested in fostering a child, how do they get a hold of you?
You go right on our website at www.childserv.org.
And why is the E not there?
The E is not there because our work isn't done yet.
And I will have work to do as well on May 24th. We are going to be performing at Stage 773. Annabelle Laval, Ralphie Roberts, and I will be performing stand-up comedy, Stand Up for Kids. So thank you so much to everyone who has already bought tickets, and we'd love to see everybody there. It is a beautiful sunny day in Chicago, and John Williams is off for a couple more days. I'll be filling in for him today and tomorrow. And, you know, if you listen to my show, if you ever have a chance to hear some of my updates, I have gone down to Springfield. In particular, over a two-year period, I was going down there to cover what was going on with our budget crisis from 2015 until 2017. We went for 736 days without a budget, and that doesn't mean that we're going to be able to get one done necessarily this year. Representative Stephanie Kifowit joins me in studio, and Representative Steve Anderson joins me in studio. They are Representative Kifowit, what's your district?
84th District.
The 84th District, encompassing what?
Aurora, Naperville, Montgomery, and Oswego.
And Representative Anderson?
I'm the 65th District, which is Batavia, Geneva, St. Charles, South Elgin, Elgin, Huntley, Hampshire, Pingree Grove, a little bit of Gilberts, and about one block of Wayne.
I feel like with that one block, you're kind of being a little greedy on your district there.
I'm
just
sorry.
Sort of wrapping it all in. Now,
I didn't draw it.
I didn't draw it. I started doing these budget crisis corners on my show, and the idea was to bring in a Republican and a Democrat. And I'm not going to lock the door and make you hammer it all out. But many people have this notion that Republicans and Democrats can't work together in Springfield. Is that you guys drove here tonight today? And I think you made it fine.
We made it very
well. Probably had a nice conversation.
We had lunch beforehand together too.
Should I just pair off reps like all over the legislature and just make them hang out for a while with that. I know that you guys, some of you do.
They're all not as good as we are.
That's true. I have to be honest. That's absolutely accurate. So Representative Kifowit, how are we doing this year in regards to a budget?
Well, I think there's ongoing discussions through the governor commissioned his budget working group. I'm on the Illinois House Democratic budget working group along with two budget committees. So I, at the end of the day, I think everybody wants a budget and we all want to try and work together, but we have pressures that which are bills that need to get paid.
Well, how are we as compared to where we were in 2015? Because the tax hike had expired, which has now been replaced. That was what was part of the negotiations last summer.
We increased the tax rate. Not fully back to where it was during the temporary tax, but close. But now it's permanent. So that's no longer an issue.
And, you know, when we talk about we're trying to, you know, we're still trying to catch up from all the bills that we hadn't paid. I know that the comptroller talks about writing checks that we didn't necessarily know where that money was coming from. Plus, we also racked up all the debt on top of that. But how does it feel as though, because there were warnings in 2015 that you guys might not come to an agreement. Is it possible because of the governor's race this year, maybe people don't want to budge? A lot of you are not running for office again, as you are Representative Anderson.
Right.
Not running.
I am not running. Yeah, no, I think that there's, I have a lot of optimism that we're going to get to a budget this year because I think it's in the interest, honestly, of both parties going into the election.
Sure, that makes
to have that. And it's not, honestly, it shouldn't be as hard because last year people had to vote for a tax increase. This year, that's not the case.
Right. Is it, do you feel that way, Representative Kifowit, that the sort of the looming election has more pressure since 2 years ago? Last year, you didn't have that as near.
Well, I think the bond houses really want a budget, too.
Sure.
So, I mean, one of the number one things with government is you can look at a lot of things on the side, but you need stability. And we just did not have stability for 736 days. So when we had no budget and we had the courts really writing the checks we couldn't cash. That's what happens when you have no budget. Everybody thinks government's going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't because the state government has to follow the federal government. It all goes down. So when you hear your cities talk about the state, it all goes down. And the bottom line is the courts then stepped in under federal law and started writing checks. We had no money to cash.
And that's one of the reasons I wanted to focus on state politics when I started going down to Springfield is that, you know, we have all these national headlines and we hear all these stories about legislation and tax cuts. But the things that affect us most immediately is the work that you do in Springfield, obviously what we do in our townships, in our counties.
Correct.
And are people reaching out to you more, you know, in the last couple of years in the fallout from the budget impasse? Did you find that more people were calling and emailing you as they should because you are their public servants?
Well, I have always encouraged that. You know, people think that state reps are inaccessible, you know, that, oh, we're like congressmen or something and you can't ever find us. We're totally accessible. Our office is in our district. You know, it's easy. You want an appointment with me? Anybody out there today wants an appointment with me? I got some time on Wednesday. Come on by. You know, it's that easy.
Right.
So I think so. I think there's been a lot of outreach. There's been a lot of education on the part of the public as to what we actually do and what we can't do when we don't have a budget.
How about your percent giveaway? Are you hearing from people?
At the end of the day, people need to be informed.
Right.
They need to be informed of our website, ilga.gov, which is G-O-V. And last week, I had a physical therapist text me and said, I can't believe you're answering your cell phone, which I do. And I was texting him about a physical therapist bill, which was very important to him. So when you come aware and you join professional organizations and they keep you informed through emails and through outreach and you go to our website, that's important. So I try to facilitate knowledge and making people understand what their state is doing for them. And contrary to what's been reported, there is a lot of good in Illinois. I know there's outlets out there that just like to talk about the bad and smash the bad and just be Debbie Downers all the time. But at the end of the day, Illinois has a lot of great attributes and we need to start talking about that.
And you can, by the way, you can follow both of our guests on their Facebook pages. You guys are also active on your Facebook page, on social media, if people, and you'll get into discussions. You're willing to debate something back and forth as long as people keep it civil.
That's
sometimes
right.
They don't. They get impassioned. They don't realize what, you know, what they're saying or, you know, or they don't care because they're anonymously behind a keyboard. But it is, I think it is important that people know that you are accessible. And it's funny because Representative Kifowit will give out her cell phone number on the air and I cringe every single time.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
We
I'll give out Stephanie's cell phone too.
I'm sure you will. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio with Representative Stephanie Kifowit and Representative Steve Anderson. We have a Republican and a Democrat. See, it's possible. I'm not going to lock the doors because there's so many more of you that have to get stuff done, too. More with our guests when we come back. You can join our conversation if you'd like to call in with a question or a comment. Please do. 312-981-7200. Again, that's 312-981-7200. I'm Patty Vasquez filling in for John Williams. Who says a Republican and a Democrat can't get Democrat? I don't know how I said that. The Representative Kifowit, Democrat, like my sound like my dad there, Democrat. My guests in the studio are Representatives Stephanie Kifowit and Representative Steve Anderson. Steve Anderson is the representative of the 65th District, which is the area in northwestern Kane County, and Representative Kifowit is of the 84th District, which is up by there, over by there, by Aurora, Boulder Hill, Montgomery. I must name all yours now. I'm Patty Vasquez, and I am filling in for John Williams. He'll be back later this week. I'll also be in tomorrow. I wanted to bring in guests that I've had on my show as well as regulars. We had many segments of Budget Crisis Corner over the 736 days we had no budget.
As a regular, because I think
absolutely, yeah. By phone and in studio. I'm always grateful for your generosity and time. I also want to talk about some of the things that you mentioned, that we are doing some things that are good, that are positive for the citizens of Illinois. Representative Kifowit, I know that you were working on legislation for nurses because they're often in hazardous situations. Tell us a little bit about this bill.
Well, actually, Patty, nurses is the third most violent profession.
What? I mean, I'm sorry.
Police, firefighters, and nurses. It's the third most violent profession. And in fact, this weekend, I just got a text message of a picture of a nurse that got punched in the face and stitches and bruised and just the environment that they live in. So we're doing legislation to put into place workplace violence prevention protocols in the hospitals and the clinics for virtually all healthcare workers and to make sure that we work our hardest to provide care for those that provide us care, to make sure that they can safely work in where they have to work, which is to make sure that we are all healthy and we are all, and when we're in crisis, we can get the care that we need. We can't have them fearful of going to work when they need to provide such a profound service to our individuals, to people who need them. So they need to be safe.
It ends up helping all of us if we know that the people who care for us the most are taken care of as well. When you say protocols, can you give us some examples of what that entails?
Some of the reporting protocols, what we're putting into place in the legislation is to really embrace the OSHA standards for workplace violence prevention, which is looking at the whole layout of the place, looking at possible areas of violence, where it occurs. Does it occur most likely in the ER? What shift does it occur most? How many security individuals you have on, when to call police, when to file reports, whistleblower protections for nurses who report workplace violence, in addition to working with local police so that they can charge individuals that create violence and are aggressive towards our nurses.
A lot of it's access to protection. That makes a lot of sense. So Representative Anderson, I know that you worked on a bill recently on court fees, and people probably figure, well, you know, what do I care about?
How people? Boring is that, right?
Right. No, but they figure, well, if someone's a criminal or
don't lie.
No.
Tell us a little bit about this bill.
So this bill affects everybody in the state of Illinois. Anybody who's ever gotten a traffic ticket, anybody who's ever been involved in any sort of a civil filing. What do? You go to court, you have to pay a fee. But it's not one fee. It's like 40 fees, okay? And we've grown our court system on the back of these fees. Mm-hmm. So it's an indirect tax on everybody who uses the court system. And so at the direction of both the U.S. and the Illinois Supreme Court, they basically told us, look, if you don't straighten out these fees, because they're a mishmash, they're different in every county, if you don't straighten out these fees, we're going to straighten them out for you. And the way we're going to straighten them out is by getting rid of all of them in one fell swoop. And so I've been working on this for 3.5 years to realign our fees, bring them down. Bring them down, ladies and gentlemen. That's the important thing to focus on, because the fees are out of control. So we passed a bill that did two very important things. One is we brought the fees down in all categories. And let me tell you, that's not easy when every agency under the sun wants that money. So that's hard to do. But we're helping the people with that. And number two, at the low-income level, we created a waiver system where if you're at 400% of the poverty level, so the working poor, not just the poor, they get waivers so they don't have to pay the fees at all. Still have to pay their fines.
Right.
Fines are punitive. That's the punishment. But fees are not.
And they're accumulative, too.
They are.
Yeah.
They absolutely are. And then people can't end up, they can't get jobs, they can't get apartments because their credit ratings are bad, et cetera, et cetera. They can't get these things expunged so they can move on with their life, all for petty stuff. And so this bill corrects that.
So there's a couple of pieces of legislation that are in the has that passed out of the House?
Yep,
in the
passed Senate? Out on Friday.
And then so it goes to the Senate next?
It's in the Senate right now, so all as right. soon as they reconvene.
We'll see how that goes. We have a listener who wanted to join the conversation. Hey, Dade?
Yes.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm just wondering, who is pushing the 401k-style pension plan to remediate our pension shortfall?
Representative Kifowit? Well, you were pointed to, by the way, by Representative Anderson, like, take it away.
She volunteered.
I did. Unfortunately or fortunately, these number things are important. A lot of pundits and political commentaries like to talk about a 401k-style plan. The problem with a 401k-style plan, it could cost up to double or triple what we're paying now, in addition to completely not being workable. A 401k was supposed to be a supplemental plan, not just a retirement-only plan. But a 401k plan would not work because it would cost us, number one, far more to support the current structure while transitioning to a 401k plan. Number two, individuals in the pensions do not get Social Security. So on top of supporting the current retirement plan, we'd have to pay into Social Security as well. And it would, like I said, it would blow a hole in the budget so big you could drive a Mack truck through it. It's not a good plan.
Okay, so what's the answer?
Well, we have been paying our pension payments. Under Governor Quinn, we pay the payment. It's just like a mortgage. We have to pay a set amount every single year to our payment, to our pension. And we have been doing that. Our pensioners...
The last time I saw, the number was a deficit of unfunded pension liability of $232 billion.
No, that's incorrect. It's about $133 billion.
Which is still huge. Let's just all say it's still huge.
It's huge. But again, you don't pay your mortgage off in 1 year. I mean, how many people can pay off a $150,000 mortgage in a year? We pay what has been given to us as our payment. Every single year we have under Governor Quinn, we have under this current administration, we make the pension payment that we're supposed to make, and we're going to be paying it off little by little, just like everybody pays their long-term debt, their mortgage debt.
Representative Anderson, yes.
But, and Representative Kifowit is correct, we have been making those payments currently. But in the past, before Representative Kifowit was there, before I was there, there were years where we made no payment at all. In fact, during the Blagojevich era, when the housing market crashed, they skipped an entire year's payment. And that ballooned the deficit like nobody's business. So it's a matter of being responsible for our money and acknowledging, by the way, this is not something we can get away from. Some people are trying to argue, well, we should amend the Constitution so we can take these rights that these people have earned away from them. I'm all in favor of looking prospectively at reform,
right.
More than willing to do that. But these folks that have these pensions, they were promised these pensions and they're entitled to them.
Exactly.
So we have to pay them.
I agree. Let's take a break here and we'll more after this on 720 WGN. Is breaking news, and we want to get right to our ABC correspondent. I'm your host today, Patty Vasquez. I'm filling in for John Williams, who will be back later in the week. There is breaking news from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who has said that Iran nuclear deal is based on lies, and they have the proof. I want to go to Jordana Miller from ABC in the Middle East. I want to find out what's going on. This seems like a pretty big story right now, Jordana.
This is such a stunning story. Here people are saying they're calling it the Mossad bombshell. Mossad, of course, is Israel's renowned spy agency. Netanyahu revealing tonight that Israel has obtained 100,000 documents, top secret Iranian documents, what he says details years of Iran's nuclear weapons program. And he did a real a show and tell for reporters today at the IDF headquarters in Tel Aviv, putting up slides that he said showed incriminating blueprints, diagrams of nuclear warheads, of the Fardo Center, which was the underground nuclear center, as well as nuclear core development. I mean, he went through a number of documents and said this is proof that the Iranians have been lying for years. and that they continue to lie. And he said one conclusion, in his estimation, was that the nuclear Iran deal is based on lies and therefore worthless.
What is, you know, what do you think is going to be, first of all, I guess, the reaction from Iran that Israel was sending spies in and collecting this information?
Right. Well, I mean, one of the big questions is how they got all of this information out. It's 150 CDs and then all of apparently half a ton of documents, how they got them out under the noses of the Iranians. We have not heard from Iran yet. They're not responding. But it's interesting that the prime minister chose to give this press conference in English. Clearly, he is trying to speak to not only the American administration, but to the Europeans who keep pressing the president to keep to stay in this Iranian nuclear deal. Certainly his words will echo in the capitals of Europe tonight, a big shock. It's likely that we know that the president saw some of this incriminating information already, because the prime minister said that during his presentation, and then we're hearing already some response from the president saying, the Netanyahu has it right, and what we see is unacceptable from Iran.
That's right. President Trump has already announced, see, I told you I was 100% right on this. And do you think there is a way to please President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu so they avoid ripping up the entire deal, the Iran deal?
That's a great question, and I don't have the answer, but it seems that U.S. officials have been indicating that the president will simply withdraw from the whole agreement if it can't be significantly changed. And what we're hearing from European officials, even Macron, the French president, who recently met with the president in the White House, he came out of that meeting saying that he believes that President Trump will withdraw from the deal. So it's unclear, but it seems that if the president pulls out, it seems the deal will collapse. And the Iranians are saying they're going to pull out if the Americans pull out.
And there are people who are concerned that this could lead to, this really could be the worst war the Middle East has ever seen. If it reaches a certain level of everyone taking their toys and going home, I guess.
Right. Well, that's the real concern. That's the looming question. You know, are we headed towards a war here in the Middle East? And I can tell you that just a few minutes ago, the Israeli Knesset, the Israeli parliament, just passed a law that enables the prime minister to actually, start and conduct a war without the approval of all the lawmakers. He can do it now with a much smaller number of lawmakers on his side, including the defense minister. That here is being seen as a warning in some sense that the prime minister is keeping some kind of emergency war path open to him should he need to take it. And that should be concerning to everybody.
And this missile attack in Syria, Iran has denied that people died in the attack, but this is something where Israel has said that if they feel that Syria is any activity by Iran in Syria is a threat, that they will counter that, haven't they?
That's right. The prime minister over the last number of months has said he has a new red line in Syria, and that is any Iranian military establishments in Syria will be, if they are used against Israel in any way, Israel will reserve the right to go after them and take them out. And that's what we've seen over the last number of months. I mean, Israel openly claimed one attack, but there were several others. And the one last night, which is also attributed to Israel, seems to tick off all the boxes that would characterize it as an Israeli strike. First, there were Iranian military killed. The Iranians are denying it, but there are multiple reports from the ground that Iranians were killed. And apparently weapons caches, weapon depots were hit. And one proof of that is the fact that the explosions were so large, they actually triggered small earthquakes, which is a sign that likely there were secondary and tertiary explosions that went off from the original blast.
Wow. It's an incredible news day, and I thank you so much for joining us. Again, we've been talking to Jordana Miller. She is the ABC News Jerusalem correspondent. Thank you so much. I know that you've got a lot of work to do, a lot more to catch up on. You have I don't know, what time is it there? It's evening.
Evening.
Yes, have a good evening, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you. When we come back, we're going to take a little bit of a turn here. I want to talk a little bit about what happened over the weekend, but perhaps our guest can also share his thoughts on so many things in the news. Coming up after this, we will talk to Lewis Black. More in a moment on 720 WGN. You're listening to The John Williams Show. I'm sitting in for John Williams. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. On the line with me is a comic who's had a tremendous impact on my career, and I'm sure he doesn't want me to go any details about it because he's one of the... people know you. Lewis Black is on the line with us, and people know you as this, you know, going out on rants and having so much rage, does it hurt your image if I tell people how nice you are?
No.
All right.
They don't believe it.
I know. The one of my happiest moments in my entire life was making you giggle one night at the Old Ale House in Old Town in 1999, and I've preserved that as one of my favorite memories.
Oh, that's great.
And I have to ask you, I know that you hosted the Correspondents' Dinner in 2005. Did you watch all of them before yours? Do you want to even be bothered with, like, knowing how other people did? Because I watch it today, and I felt like a comic going into a corporate gig going, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God.
Well, that's what it is. It's a corporate gig to the 500th power, and it's Washington, which I'm born and raised around there, and they're generally, if you play any kind of somewhat political grouping there, be it whatever it is, they're not fun. They think especially if you're doing kind of jokes with a political bent, they're really irritated. You know, they think they know it. You know, and they think they know comedy, which they don't. Okay. That's the first thing is, I stopped watching a long time ago. I didn't really watch people who, I may have watched something before I did it, before I went and did the thing. But I stupidly thought, oh, I have to do this. Well, I really didn't, after doing it, I would never do it again. I certainly would never have accepted, I never would have done the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I never would have done it after doing the Congressional Correspondents' Dinner.
Yeah,
it's beyond belief. Because then they showed my thing on C-SPAN and people started commenting on it. Well, it's not shot like a special, schmuck.
Right.
All right. The audience isn't mic'd, so you don't hear their reaction. So you're making a determination on this and this. You don't have that. You don't know that sitting just two seats away from me is Dick Cheney. On the other side is Mr. Happiness, Mitch McConnell. I mean, come on.
Well, what do you think about the concept of the Correspondents' Dinner in the first place? Sitting down, the politicians, where the journalists want to get their stories from, if they want to get their leaks or if they want to criticize them or shed a light on what's going on in government. What do you think about even the idea of this party?
I think it's somewhat ludicrous in terms of Congress. It's even more ludicrous in terms of the White House and bringing in someone to... bringing in a comic is beyond belief to me. The last one who really could do it, because he had their numbers and that we weren't dealing with social media, was Will Rogers.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's going back a ways.
Well, it is going back a ways. Will Rogers actually introduced Herbert Hoover once on a national public address because he was more liked than Herbert Hoover. So, we're in a different time frame now. And it's like, what do you care? It's a comic, you schmuck. With all that's going on in the world, you're going to worry about what she said or he said? What is the matter with you?
Well, that's what's so maddening is they're like, oh, she crossed the line. Is there even a line anymore with the kinds of things the president and people in government have said these days?
No, there's no line. Okay? no line. And plus, once again, I didn't watch. I'm not going to watch. But I do know I could tell you whether the joke worked or not. That's the line.
Right.
Does the joke work?
I kind of ruined this for my producer, Elif, because we sat down and I was going through it and I was like, oh, she stepped over her own line by trying to tag it. Those are the kinds of things, right? The technical parts of it, you know, that kind of stuff. But people, I get to this point now, and I know you have this all the time, is that no matter what we say, people hear it differently. They hear what they want to hear.
They stop in the middle of your sentence if you hear a word.
Yep.
And go... Because I do this thing now that I think is a setup line. And they, I know that man and wife accidentally, which is the key word, accidentally shot. So they, I know that they don't, they literally don't laugh during the next part, which is during church gun safety talk. So, right. And that's a real headline.
Right.
Okay, that's a legitimately real. I didn't make it up. I didn't write it. So nobody in the audience can go, well, and then I have to explain to the audience that they are so uptight about anything that has to do with gun safety that they can't get past this because, you know, that they don't hear. And then I have to explain how the joke works for them. Because they'll stop it. They stop a shot.
Exactly.
I've had it happen too many times.
Right. And here's the thing is that, and what I've noticed when I've worked with you, how long did it take for you to not care where the audience was? Or do you care? Do you still go, this is what's going to derail our moment together in this live performance?
Yeah, I still get.
Do you?
And then I'll take some of the blame sometimes when it's my fault. And then sometimes I just look at them and go, really? You want me to? Seriously, I have better things to do than to spend time with you.
Well, you're going to be spending time with us. You're coming to Chicago, and I hope I get to see you
yes.
this time. You have an event. You have a show coming up on October 12th. Is that your show in Chicago?
Show in Chicago at the Jumbo Theater there.
The Chicago Theater, I think, is where you're going to be.
Yes.
Yes. And you know, I was telling Elif, my producer, I mean, I started with you at Zany's on Wells. You had to perform, speaking of shows in your career, and I hope I'm not doing like that weird thing, but you had to perform on the 1999 New Year's Eve into Y2K
yeah.
with like 10 people in the audience. I think they're still eating their corn out of the pantry, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. It was really great. It was 10 people, and there was a bottle of champagne on every table. And at the end, everybody came in. I forget the comics who were working out in out at the other places all came downtown. We all sat at different tables with a big bottle of champagne going. Nobody came out that night.
No, nobody. There was nobody out that night for Y2K.
Yeah, no, not a person in sight. It was really good. But I got a check, which is to Zany's credit. And Zany's was, you know, and to give them their due, they're celebrating an anniversary now, and I did a video thing for them recently, because that was a great room to work in.
Yeah,
a great room.
It's 40 years. Well, I mean, you know, when you're in town for the big theater, maybe you stop by and do a set. Not, I know it's weird when you come in town, you want to hang out with people. And you are always so generous with your time, with fans, with friends, and again, with me today. I miss you and hope I get to see you soon.
So do I.
I'm so glad you had the time to do this segment. Please be well. That's Lewis Black. Go to lewisblack.com for all of his upcoming shows, including the one right here in Chicago on October 12th at the Chicago Theater. Please be well, my friend.
Thank you, Patty. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
I'm here to make jokes. I have no agenda. I'm not trying to get anything accomplished. So everyone that's here from Congress, you should feel right at home.
That's one of the first jokes from the Correspondents' Dinner this weekend. Michelle Wolf, a lot of conversation, a lot of debate, a lot of very strong feelings. We talked to Lewis Black before the news, and I wanted to see what somebody in the audience and someone who's been to these dinners many times might have thought about this. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, filling in for John Williams. And Clarence Page is on the line with us, of course, senior member of the Chicago Editorial Board. Hey, Mr. Page, how are you doing today?
Just great. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Were you at this year's dinner?
Yes, I was. I've suffered through about 20 or 25 of these dinners.
Wow. So you've seen uncomfortable, right?
Yeah, It's fascinating to me. This was the most uncomfortable I've seen a speaker put people since Stephen Colbert back during the Bush, George W. Bush's years. And it was shortly after his show was starting to gain some popularity. So a lot of folks in the audience weren't that familiar with him. And as witnesses will tell you, the folks in the audience were kind of mixed in their reaction, whether to laugh or not, some of the jokes, while the people watching at home loved it. And it helped to catapult Colbert's career. A similar thing happened to Myers a few years later, who's now on the Tonight Show, I guess it is. I'm not that familiar with late night TV, as I should be.
The Seth Meyers show comes on after the Jimmy Fallon Tonight Show. Yes,
that's right. That's right. He was terrific. In fact, that was the night he told a joke about Donald Trump. Trump was in the audience. That's the last time Trump has been to the White House Correspondents' Dinner, including this year.
Wow. Okay. So I'm glad you brought up Stephen Colbert's performance. The way I understood it, if I recall correctly at the time, as you mentioned, he wasn't as popular as he is now, obviously. He had the Colbert Report on Comedy Central. He had been a correspondent on Jon Stewart's show. What right. I remember is I think that he was hired because people didn't quite get that he was actually skewering conservatives on his show. He was doing a send-up of the O'Reilly Factor.
That's right. And he it was a very good send up. A lot of folks thought he was a conservative. He had a great ironic way of couching his bites. Now, there was George W. Bush sitting just a few people away from him. My favorite line from Colbert's speech, where he was defending the president and pointing out, sir, everyone knows that reality has got a liberal bias. There was a pause for a half second, and everybody roared.
Well,
especially me. I'll never forget that. I've reused that line many times.
Well, and that's the thing is that there were some cleverly written jokes in Michelle Wolf's set.
Yes, there were.
And it felt as though the audience is always going to be kind of like, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? I mean, I remember watching audio of Don Imus ripping apart the Clintons. And as you mentioned, Colbert and this sort of weird response, Wanda Sykes, many people also thought that she had crossed the line. But
I was there that night. But remember, that was Barack Obama's. I think that was his first White House correspondence there, and she obviously revered Obama, so she was not that nasty about him. She even called him sir a couple of times while she was doing it.
Here, I want to listen. I know some people have already heard some of these, but I'm gonna play another clip. This is number four. This one was this is where it starts. It starts to get a little bit weird.
There is a lot to cover tonight. There's a lot to go over. I can't get to everything. I know there's a lot of people that want me to talk about Russia and Putin and collusion, but I'm not going to do that because there's also a lot of liberal media here, and I've never really wanted to know what any of you look like when you orgasm. Except for maybe you, Jake Tapper. I bet it's something like this. That's all the time we have.
So, Clarence Page, do you think that that was probably like maybe perhaps the dirtiest, many people in the room would have wanted? Because she not only got dirty, there were some that were people think that it was a little unnecessary. But would you say this was the raunchiest performance you've seen at the Correspondents' Dinner?
That particular joke I thought was really well delivered.
I thought so too.
Well, but I was uncomfortable when she went after Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who was just sitting two seats away.
Right.
And the thing was, it wasn't. It went from funny to nasty real fast.
Which one was the nastiest to you? Because which one was the nastiest, Sarah Huckabee? Because when she said that she burns facts and uses the ash, so taking truth basically and using that to make a smoky eye, that was that one, right?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to break your punchline, but I'm not going to quote this exactly right. But she described Sarah as a Uncle Tom for women. Who they want to be proud of her, but she embarrasses them. That was the line, and I'm not quoting it exactly right. But
what do you call somebody who disappoints white women? And she said,
there you go.
Aunt Coulter, right?
That's right. That was the second punchline right behind it. And it was, that's the thing. I understand the joke, and I get it. But, you know, the delivery, and with Sarah Huckabee sitting right there a couple of seats away, it would have been different if she was going to come up and give a speech right after, like at a comedy roast.
Right.
But there was no equal time on this occasion. I, by the way, am a member of the Gridiron Club, which is the oldest press club in Washington. And our motto is, first of all, the gridiron singes but doesn't burn. So our jokes don't cross the line if we can help it. And we pre-screen all of the main jokes that we perform, although the speakers are free to say what they want to say. And the other line is that we believe that the president always gets the last word. That's the other line. So whoever the president is. And this year, Donald Trump did show up at the Gridiron. He skipped last year, but he did show up this year. He was well greeted, and he was funny for about 10 minutes. Unfortunately, he spoke for about 40 minutes.
Oh, no!
That's another story, you know. But trying to get Trump to tell self-deprecating humor is just very hard to do, his own staff will tell you. And I think that was probably the main reason why he didn't show up this year. But now he feels vindicated because of the way Sarah Huckabee Sanders was treated.
Well, that's the thing I noticed the most, was that this kind of played into President Trump and many in his administration who could say, look, see, that, you know, they're just nasty, they're foul-mouthed, which is so strange coming from this administration. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, right. That's the other issue. A lot of folks say, you know, well this kind of lets Trump off the hook when you start, behaving as badly as him. You know, you go low and we go lower, you know, that sort of thing. So that's part of the argument that's going on in the wake of Saturday night.
Now, we're talking to Clarence Page from the Chicago Tribune, and I have to ask, what do you think about the sort of evolution of this correspondence dinner? You know, especially because the climate has changed, the tone of it has changed, the people who attend it has changed. Do you think it should still continue as a tradition?
I think people only see a short snatch of it. Most of the evening was dedicated to awards and tributes to journalists who are now in jail around the world. Or
lives. And we don't even know that. Yeah.
There are all these young journalism scholarship winners, including some from Chicago, who were honored. Most people don't see all the rest of it, or even the rest of the speakers. They just hear one part that stirred controversy, which just goes to show you can't trust the media, see?
There you go. Well, I think, actually, let me just play. I know I told you we weren't going to play anymore, but there is just one last joke that I thought didn't land well enough. I thought was actually pretty funny. Number 9 about the print media.
There's a lot of print media here. There's a ton of you guys, but I'm not going to go after print media tonight because it's illegal to attack an endangered species.
That's true.
Exactly.
Everybody was turning to everybody saying, that's true.
Is that why we didn't get as big of an applause? Because people were looking like, oh, yeah, please.
Yeah.
Thanks for reminding us.
Yes, all the bad memories. And I mean, it is a serious situation. I don't want to make light of it. But she also, I thought you were going to play this part where she talked about how, I mean, she mocked the media for being mad at Trump, while at the same time, he has helped our circulation.
She basically said that President Trump made you guys, helped you sell newspapers, sell your books, and sell TV.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's a little over the top, but not entirely, because she's right. We have had a lot more activity, a lot more public interest in public affairs since Trump's election, and that's our business. We do it, and it's something we talk about all the time. But it was like I said, she also, I don't know if we're going to get to it or not, but also about the Democrats, she had one really well-crafted line about people suspecting the Democrats of working with the Russians. She said, how do they expect the Democrats to find Russia when they can't even find Michigan and Wisconsin?
Yes.
And this, another very true joke that points out a big weakness among the Democrats, but you won't hear the conservatives complaining about that one. They just talk about the ones where she hit the Republicans and conservatives, which indeed were more numerous.
Yeah, there was a lot to take apart. I have the entire transcript in front of me, and I look forward to someday meeting you. I know you're in D.C. right now, getting some work done, and next time you're in Chicago, I would love to have you in studio. I'm on a little bit later. I'm on 11 p.m. to 2 a.m., but if you're a night owl at all, it'd be good to have you on the show.
I'd love to come on again. Been a long time.
Appreciate that. Please read Clarence Page in the Chicago Tribune. Go to chicagotribune.com. Print is not dead, my friend.
That's right.
That's right. We're live and kicking. Have a wonderful rest of your afternoon.
Thank you. You too.
It is a gorgeous day, and I thought it would be an excellent day to reaffirm maybe some commitments you made for yourself at the New Year's. You know, when you make these resolutions, you say, I want to get in better shape. I want to read more. And now it's about to get summertime in Chicago. That's right. We're going to get our summer on in Chicago. And I wanted to invite positivity expert Dr. Daphne Scott. By the way, I'm Patty Vasquez filling in for John Williams in case anyone's panicking. I'm filling in for Pete McMurray, who was filling in for John Williams, I believe is the order of succession that we're working on. Dr. Daphne Scott joined us on the line. Hey, Daphne, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great, Patty. Super excited to be with you. I loved that intro music.
A little Back in Black?
Personally. Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was perfect. It very much fits my personality, don't you think?
I do think it does. You are a leadership expert. You're a podcast host. You also do a lot of motivational speeches, keynote addresses. And I love the energy that you bring to an event to inspire people, to motivate them, of course. And I thought we could share that with the audience. So I'm going to be honest. I'll just use me as an example. I made a New Year's resolution that I would read for half an hour a day and I would work out 4 days a week. I even put it on my phone. I had scheduling time with myself. I would, every day at 1 p.m. I tried making time of my day and I get a little calendar notification. Did you read today? And it just reminds me that I have failed miserably working out. How do I turn this around?
There's a real simple process that I like to call recommitment. So, the first step is that we commit, right? So we organize ourselves to move in a certain direction. And a lot of times what can happen is we fall off of our commitment. Now, most people have a weird relationship to the word commitment. They have a weird relationship in that they think that we make a commitment and we stick with it, and if we fall off of it, it's just ruined. You just like, and I failed.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm like, oh, missed another one. Guess that's not happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm a loser.
Exactly.
So what's really all
you're in my head. Stop. You're in my head.
I know. All that's really required, truly, Patty, truly with all that's required is to simply recommit. If that, those two goals that you made for yourself, if those are important to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're not. Maybe you looked back at it and you thought, I told myself I'd do these things because it seems like something I, quote, should do. Right? I should.
Mm-hmm.
Aha. I should work out 4 days a week, or I should read a half hour a day, which a lot of times the goals that we set for ourselves or the commitments that we make for ourselves can come from a should, and that's motivating for all of about 2 seconds versus, this is something that really will, move my life in the direction that I want it to go, and I'm going to commit to that, and when I fall off of it, I'm just going to simply recommit.
Okay.
I'm going to simply recommit.
So recommit and figure out the reasons that you're doing something. Like, I want to be in better shape. I want to feel good. I want to live longer.
Yeah.
I think ultimately I know it seems like a big picture goal. And I want to read more because I know as a writer, you have to keep sort of feeding yourself, right, intellectually. And there are a lot of different things that people want to do to make time for themselves. What other kinds of ideas do you have for folks to make time for themselves?
Well, again, it comes from commitment. What you're really hitting on, Patty, is what you just did is you talked about the vision that you have for yourself. And, we come to change. So now you're talking about change, right? So we come to change from one of two positions. We can come to change from being afraid of something. So I better change because if I don't, something really bad is going to happen in my life. That is one way to motivate ourselves.
I'm afraid of dying. You're saying I'm afraid of dying is one thing that I could
right.
use.
Well, one way.
Sure.
I'm not judging it. It's just a way to do it. The other is to have a greater vision. So we're either pushed by suffering or pulled by a vision. And so on the other side, what you actually just did really well, actually, you're just like a perfect, test subject, Patty.
I'll be your guinea pig.
Case subject, yeah, exactly, is you actually talked about a greater vision, and you talked about how, for example, reading would actually fit into another dimension of your life, which is writing and writing comedy and doing the things that you do. So, you had a greater vision and how this thing can actually feed something that's even bigger to you than simply just reading.
Right.
You got to, what's the underlying, tenet. And I imagine there's a million things that you could do that would feed that part of your life that don't only include reading. But it's just the point that you were really pointing to a vision, a greater vision. So it's usually some combination of the two. You know, they're pushed by suffering or pulled by a vision.
Well, some of the things that you and I talk about, too, is like, let's say somebody wants to make a change in their life. Maybe they know that they want to have a different career. They want another job. But they, you know, fear is the thing that holds them back, not being afraid.
Absolutely.
And we also, you've walked me through a lot of times, is what are the stories we tell ourselves about that?
Yeah.
That's a lot of where fear comes from.
Yeah, well, not only where it comes from, but when we're going to step into the unknown. So, for example, let's talk about, you know, getting a new job or switching, you know, moving. Like I moved last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
I could have told myself all kinds of stories about, you know, how horrible it was going to be. And what we try to do when we're going to step into the unknown is we try to make sense of it so that we can feel safe. Because stepping in the unknown really means that we're giving up a lot of the familiar, we're giving up a lot of control, we're giving up sort of this, you know, safety that we feel like we've created for ourselves. So being able to know that we're stepping into the unknown and that we're going to want to start to tell ourselves stories so that we can make sense of our experience is
right. Sort
of just what we do. And noticing the power of those stories, right? Do those stories move us closer to our goal and what our greatest heart's desire is, or do those stories start to hold us back? That's really the key. And realizing that we can question those stories, we can really put those stories up against, you know, like, well, is that really true? Like, do we really know that? And what we start to find out is we don't. You start to do your work and then you start to find out that we really don't know.
Because there's just so much space in your mind for the unknowns that you start creating it. So we've been hanging out with Dr. Daphne Scott. You can listen to her podcast, daphne-scott.com. It's the super fantastic leadership show. Look, during the day, I have the notes in front of me. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, you're firing on all cylinders, Patty.
It's different. So. All right, I have to run because Rocon's coming up next. Doc, it's been a great talking to you again. That's daphne-scott.com. Have a great rest of your day. I'll talk to you in a few minutes. Hold on the line.
See you, Patty.
All right, more after this on 720 WGN. There's a lot of movement going on here. This is my first time ever having you swoop in, and lights are coming on. It's a little too bright.
Things happen in this room.
Mm-hmm. Bro, hello.
When the Rocon show with Anna DeVlantis arrives, no big deal. And we have I have a whole protocol to where everything must be, and everything is placed into its place, and then the lights come on for the CLTV.
Yes.
And then I panic.
Okay.
And that's how that goes. So you're watching all of that.
This is a little different. Like, there was breaking news out of Israel, and middle of the night, there's just like, maybe we'll get a phone call because there's a dog loose. It's
a different pace this time of day than there is at night. But I think you are the perfect antidote to the scary moment that is midnight, I think.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. Oh, it works out.
It is interesting when there's a storm. That's because people lose power. The only thing that works sometimes is their radio, their AM/FM radio. So we are always there.
Just the AM radios.
Just
have the little AM transistor
thing. I forgot about that. Yeah, don't pay no attention to the other ones.
Yeah, but who needs that?
Dot what? Point something? No, we don't need that. What's coming up on your show?
It's a good question.
All right,
let's see here. We got Mr. Skilling is going to join us because the weather is too beautiful.
So nice.
To be believed.
Thank him.
Jeff Earle, U.S. Deputy Political Editor of Mail Online, will be here also in the 3 o'clock hour. You got Well, yes, there's breaking news out of Israel that they apparently just found these documents just 2 days before the president's going to make a decision about the Iran nuclear deal.
Do you see all the CDs?
Yes, it was like folders. We just found these. Iran's been cheating. So we'll talk about that, find out what that's all about. And then, listen to this, Ed Obradovich is going to be here to talk Bears and the Bears draft with us in the 4 o'clock hour. You're not going to want to miss that. See, now this is my favorite Ed Obradovich meeting of the year, which is, this is where everybody's kind of optimistic about things.
Sure. I don't raise my optimism until it's time.
Yeah, well, he's going to raise some optimism.
Okay.
And we're one step closer to Rocon and Rocon. Which is the making Rocon Smith, as I call him, part of the Rocon show with Anna DeVlantis.
Okay.
So we're working on that.
Excellent.
Yes. That's all good.
That's good.
That's everything you need in the next few minutes.
You have more? Does Anna not want to come in? Well, is she here today?
Anna has her people, and they rush her in at the very end with...
Like
Beyonce. I don't know if anybody see Beyonce at the basketball game over the weekend. She was in Golden State. She was in Oakland for the Golden State game with Jay-Z. And it's amazing how little she makes Jay-Z look.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, how funny.
Like, she makes,
she's a,
like,
towering figure?
She's like this figure, and she's got, you know, the hair is like, you know, sort of, you know, all big, and she's just like this presence, this gigantic magnetic presence. And Jay-Z's in the hat, and he's like, ew. Ew. It's like, you've lost him. We've lost him. All right.
Excellent. Well, good to see you. I'll see you tomorrow, too. One more day, by the way.
Okay, that'll be very fun. Excellent. I look forward to that.